Welcome in to the newest edition of the Justin Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL, week 5 and 6. We will touch on college football as they are coming up on a big weekend. And also, we will have our best for last. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Justin Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports, for all of your breaking news, updates, and some highlights. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just in time, sports.
Life is good.
Look, this is Justin Town Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing agitation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is just a time sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is just in time sports, come and get your weekly takes. He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. Welcome into season 6, episode 21 of the Justin Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. As always, rocking out with you guys. This time on a Wednesday morning, by the time you guys hear this. So you guys know my schedule is all over the place sometimes. So I want to talk with you guys and communicate with you guys whenever I get the opportunity to do so. It just so happened to be late on a Tuesday night. By the time you guys hear this, it'll be Wednesday morning. But I am over the moon excited to be back in the studio talking to you guys, the Justin Time Sports family. Whether that be you listen to the show and only follow on Instagram, or you follow on Twitter or Facebook or Threads, or you just listen to the podcast. I hope you like, rate, subscribe, share, rate, and review. That is a huge help to us, the JTS family. And also shows me you guys are supporting, right? Because if you guys rate an episode that's about basketball lower, I know you guys more football. If you rate a football show lower than a basketball show, I may think you like basketball. Maybe I'll talk about your team. Who knows, right? But regardless, I want you to like, rate, subscribe, review, and share. Honestly, your honest opinion on that, right? Because it helps us at JTS when I get that feedback. But you guys want to hear about feedback. You guys want to hear about what's going to help me. You want to hear about my thoughts on a wild and wacky NFL week. This is why you love NFL, man. Like, this is why you love football, why you love the NFL. When it comes down to professional teams, most games are decided by 3-ish points. Anywhere from 3 to about 4.5 is most of the games in the NFL. And we've had a wild and wacky weekend. Let's get started off in Philly. So Philly comes out there, and we've been hearing seeds of dissension lately in Philly. And it's popped out in A.J. Brown's Instagram. It's popped out privately with Devontae Smith. It's even showed up in Saquon Barkley. And the complaints are the offense isn't good. Like, yes, we're winning games. Yes, we're finding a way. But the offense is unproductive. And it's unproductive for everybody. It's not like last year when the passing attack was down and Jalen Hurts didn't throw for 3,000 yards, so on and so forth. But Saquon Barkley darn near breaks the NFL rushing record. You say, okay, I can see where the offense is. We're still scoring a bunch of points. I get my opportunities when I get them. You know, timely passes, timely completions, or whatever. But it's set up to where, you know, we are still pretty productive offense. Well, the NFL has loaded up and decided, Saquon Barkley, you're not going to beat us this year. So a lot of teams are taking Saquon away. When that happens, two Pro Bowl, All-Pro level receivers and a Super Bowl winning quarterback should be able to take advantage of one-on-one coverage, so on and so forth, and they are not. I don't know the exact number of halves, but this season in the NFL, there's 5 weeks. You get two halves a game, 32, 64 times five. What's that? 320-ish halves of quarterback play has happened in the NFL this year. Jalen Hurts probably has the two worst ones. He was 0-for-8 2 weeks ago, and they found a way to win the game in the second half. And then in another game, he was absolutely terrible as well. And again, same thing. They found a way to win it. They blocked field goals and all kind of stuff and found a way to win the game. Well, they played the Denver Broncos. In another one of those, the offense is off. Now, they gave a concerted effort to pass the ball to Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown and really, truly abandoned their strength with his running the ball. And it started off decent early. You know, nothing real nervous, nothing real concerning at all. Run game could have been better, but they were getting the ball to their stars, and you saw a happy A.J. Brown and a happy Devontae Smith and so on and so forth, right? And then when it got to the crunch time, when it got down to the nitty-gritty, when the Eagles just couldn't put the Broncos away, one of the better defenses in the league, several high-paid players on it. They've got a good defensive coordinator. And the Broncos just couldn't put – I mean, Philly just couldn't put the Broncos away. Ultimately, the Broncos win the game 21-17, and it was like the floodgates open. Now, excuse me. Earlier that day, a report came out by Diana Russini. So Russini – Diana, she puts out a report basically lambasting the Philadelphia Eagles offense. And it also had several points of frustration from their best two receivers in A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Now, Devontae Smith is an Alabama Nick Saban kind of guy. He's not going to say a word publicly. Excuse me. A.J. Brown has let multiple things slip publicly. Interviews, Instagram stories, anything to get his point across, he has let it be known. I think that there's a offensive problem in Philly that has been masked or perfumed by winning. That the problem is there, the organization knows the problem is there, everyone knows the problem is there. But it has been masked or covered or perfumed by winning. Because what's the first thing everybody went to? Where you're complaining, but you're winning. Oh, yeah, you don't get your, you're not getting your numbers, but you're winning. Oh, you're not getting 10, 12 targets a game, but you're winning. That was everyone's kind of thing. Well, if I'm getting more and more frustrated, regardless of how much winning we do, the second we don't, that veil is gone, and it's pure frustration. I think that's where A.J. Brown is currently. It's just the veil of winning is gone. Yes, they won a Super Bowl. Yes, they hadn't lost since week 8 or something like that of last season. So, great. The veil was gone when they lost to the Denver Broncos following in an inept second half offensively. And just the pattern continue. If you're an A.J. Brown, if you're a Devontae Smith, the pattern of just not being good enough offensively continued in that game. Now, granted, Denver, like I said, is one of the best defenses in the league, but it happened again. And so something's going on in Philly. I think a move's going to have to get made. I could see A.J. Brown being traded. I don't know to where. I would love it to be New England, but I don't know to where. And kind of get a resolution on this situation in Philly, because right now it is toxic for everybody. I don't think anybody's having fun right now in Philly. And so that is a major problem. But going from bad offenses to great offenses to otherworldly offenses, in otherworldly uniforms. The Seattle Seahawks and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had one of the best quarterback games. I mean, probably the best quarterback game you'll see all season. Also, two of the coolest uniforms. Tampa with the white throwback to the swashbuckler days. Not the creamsicles, but the white version. And the Seahawks flash back to the Steve Largent era baby blue, sky blue, bright green uniforms they sported. I mean, probably it was the best uniform combination battle all season. And it was one of, if not the best, quarterback game all season. At one point, Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, it was, you know, early fourth quarter. Not quite mid, early fourth quarter. They had 7 total incompletions. They were combined like 60 of 67 or something like that. Early in the fourth quarter. It was insane. I mean, but this is a battle of the number one overall pick in Baker Mayfield and the third overall pick in Sam Darnold. Both guys have gone through the ringer in their respective original franchises. Baker in Cleveland, Sam in New York. And it's kind of what I was saying last week. And I kind of circled this game last week. I said, you know, these guys had the opposite paths in college, right? Darnold was the high-level prospect that went to USC and was on scholarship and was the man sophomore and junior year and came out and was the number 3 overall pick and, right, and got dropped into New York media. Baker came up the rough side of the mountain. He chose to be a walk-on twice. He wins the Heisman Trophy. He becomes I don't think Baker went 1. I can't think of right now, but he becomes a first-round pick. I'm pretty sure it wasn't 1. He becomes a first-round pick. And where does he get dropped off into? Cleveland. To come back up the rough side of the mountain again. I mean, and so, however, oh yeah, he was number 1. Okay, yeah, he was number 1 in 2018. However, I say once they got to the NFL, their careers have looked awfully similar. They both go to New York, one go to Cleveland, 2 poverty franchises. At one point, they're in Carolina together. Both started games for Carolina. They leave Carolina. Darnold ends up in Minnesota. Baker ends up in Tampa. Both have their resurgence. Darnold in Minnesota, Baker in Tampa, and then both go get fairly comparable NFL contracts. Darnold got his from Seattle. Baker got his in Tampa. And Sunday they met. And they met, I mean, it was a quarterback masterclass on both sides. So Darnold late gets bumped on a pass. It goes short. Tampa picks it and he went on a field goal. 38-35. I mean, it was a masterclass of quarterbacking. It showed why both of them were top 3 picks. It showed why Baker has a Heisman. It showed why Sam Darnold was, you know, one of, if not the top quarterback in his high school class. I mean, it was an absolute show. To put into context what this game was, and it was, you know, 4-1 Tampa against 3-2 Seattle. Baker Mayfield went 29 of 33, 379 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a QBR of 90. And a passer rating of 134.7. So QBR has a max score of 100. Passer rating has a max score of 158.3. Darnold was 28 of 34, 341, 4 touchdowns. That pick we just mentioned. A QBR of 95.8 out of 100. And a passer rating of 135.4 out of 158.3. Combined, they had 10 incompletions on 77 attempts. I mean, we're talking otherworldly numbers. I mean, they were the first quarterback duo to go for 350 and 4 touchdowns against each other. I mean, they were just going, I mean, all kind of completion and yard and touchdown, you know, first time evers. That game was a quarterback masterclass between Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, and I was glad we had the opportunity to watch it. The Arizona Cardinals, won't spend a lot of time on this, but the Arizona Cardinals made the waves, made the headlines whenever they lost to the Tennessee Titans. The reason why, A, Titans first win, B, the Arizona Cardinals lost that. The Arizona Cardinals found a way to pull defeat from the jaws of victory. They were up 21-7, running back breaks a long run, he drops the ball on the half-yard line, leads to a touchback. So instead of the Cardinals going up 28-7, probably killing the will of the Tennessee Titans, it ends up being Titans have new life, and then they make it interesting. So interesting, in fact, that at one point, Cam Ward throws a pick. The Arizona Cardinals fumble the pick, kicks it around. It ends up in the end zone for the Titans to fall on it for the touchdown. So an interception thrown by Cam Ward results in a touchdown for the Titans on the same play. Like I said, the Cardinals found a way to pull defeat from the jaws of victory. So much so that Jonathan Gannon, and we're going to talk about this in our news section, ends up fined $100,000 for his outbursts and physical contact with the running back who dropped the ball that would have all but ended the game 28-7. The Arizona Cardinals, after starting out pretty decent, have kind of slid in a little bit. They're on a snide. The Arizona Cardinals, as we sit here today, are now 2-3. And again, they're currently on the snide, not having, won a game that many, myself included, not even penciled in, chiseled in as a W, especially when the running back was breaking in the open field to go up 28-7. So very interesting in Arizona. And to our primetime games, our Sunday night and our Monday night, my New England Patriots, also Jai's New England Patriots. You'll see him on the JTS YouTube show and the Hey Jai podcast. Jai and my New England Patriots defeat the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo 23-20 in what's being named the Stephon Diggs revenge game. It was Diggs' first time being in Highland Park. I think it's Highland Park or High Point Park, whatever it is. Highmark Park, who cares? Since he was traded. Because even when he went to Houston, he didn't play them and he had a torn ACL and so on and so forth. Anyway, it was his first time being back, and it was a Stephon Diggs legacy game. Drake May looked spectacular. Welcome to the top 10 club, kid. He was making a play all over the field, very similar to what Josh Allen was doing on the other side. Ultimately, Drake May made the plays that he had to make, and his defense didn't get the blunders that Buffalo's defense got at certain moments. But kudos to Drake May. Kudos to Mike Vrabel. Kudos to the entire Patriots organization, staff, and fan base. We have our guy, a quarterback and head coach for the next 7 to 10 years. It's a great feeling. And then lastly, the Kansas City Chiefs, or should I say the Jacksonville Jaguars, fall their way into victory against the Kansas City Chiefs in a game that was pretty wild, actually. Another one of those topsy-turvy games. Chiefs get a lead 14-0. Jaguars bring it back. At one point, you think there's a big kickoff in Kansas City. Turns out there's a kickoff violation. And then what an absolute show by Trevor Lawrence late, man. He managed the clock perfectly. Even though he stumbles, gets stepped on and falls and doesn't have the prettiest, most graceful game-winning touchdown, it still was a game-winning touchdown. And the defense ended up holding the last few seconds. Travis Hunter was used more as a two-way player. He played about 60-ish total snaps, 30-something on offense, 20-something on defense, 30-something on offense. Regardless, it was slightly leaned one direction. He made a couple of highlights. He got a deflection, and he had the crazy catch on offense when he ends up being dropped on his back and pretty high up. But he gets up and continues the game, of course. He had an injury scare on point, but he came back in and finished the game. But shout out Jacksonville, 4-1 for the first time in a very long time. Shout out Liam Cohen, the Baker Mayfield's old offensive coordinator. He's the head coach in Jacksonville. So shout out him for keep having that team be 4-1. And then a little quick hitter news. We already discussed the $100,000 fine for Jonathan Gannon for his conduct on the sideline. The NFL has fined Jerry Jones, owner of the Cowboys, $250,000 due to his actions regarding flipping off fans at MetLife Stadium. Jerry calls the incident unfortunate. Odell Beckham was suspended by the NFL for illegal use of PEDs last season. He would not be eligible to sign with the team or participate with the team for another 6 weeks. Trades. A couple of trades went down. So Joe Flacco and a sixth round pick was traded to the Cleveland Browns, Cincinnati Bengals rather, for a fifth round pick. And the Bengals are trying to get Joe Flacco ready to play on Sunday. They are officially moving on to Joe Flacco. And Owe of the Baltimore Ravens was traded to the Chargers in exchange for a safety or a DB whose name escapes me right this second. And speaking of Baltimore, C.J. Gardner-Johnson has signed a deal to be on the Baltimore practice squad with a plan in place for elevation to the main roster. But up next, we are going to talk about NFL Week 6. Welcome back into the show. And now we are going to jump into NFL Week 6. We're going to get it started off with a Thursday night preview, kind of talking about those Eagles. So those Eagles are playing the Giants, right? And where Jackson Dart's a little beat up and it's a short week. And I remember on the YouTube show, we were kind of talking about the Jackson Dart thing. And I was like, it's going to be after this stretch. Because there's a stretch where it's like Philly, somebody else, the Philly Niners, Philly again, I think, for New York. Oh, and I was looking at, man, that's going to be tough for Jackson Dart if he has to get dropped in anywhere near that mix. I was, you know, the quote-unquote landing spot is the Saints. But then after that, it's Philly on a short week, Broncos, back to Philly, Niners, Bears, kind of a softish spot, Packers, Lions, Patriots, Commanders, Vikings. He ended with the Raiders and the Cowboys. I would have waited till after Eagles won, because then you get the 10 days before Denver to kind of get them ready and have them ready to go. And that was my point. I said, there's no easy spot there, but I said, if you're going to do it after Eagles won, because you have the 10 days before you play Sunday to get them good, basically get them a 2 week prep period for Denver. They didn't. He's on the field already. And now he gets to play an Eagles team that's probably coming apart, hopefully not, but potentially coming apart at the seams. But if they aren't, they're pissed off and they're united. And they're going to play you, Jackson Dart, who's beat up. Very interesting that a QB was traded, Joe Flacco, intra-division trade, juxtaposed to Cleveland, or Cincinnati rather, making a phone call to New York for Jameis. I find that very interesting, the fact that Jameis Winston and a sixth didn't go to Cincinnati for a fifth. I find that very interesting that that didn't happen. In fact, it was Joe Flacco and a sixth to Cincy for a fifth. But that's interesting. But nonetheless, that is kind of the game there. I'm expecting Philly to come out and roll here. New Orleans handled New York, especially once they got in front. The first snap that New Orleans had all season with the lead offensively happened in that game. And so New York, like I said, they ended up losing 31-19. New Orleans took control and handled New York the rest of the way. I expect Philly to come out, pound the ball, get some quick throw, easy money throws to Devontae and AJ, kind of keep them at bay. But I expect one of those Saquon Barkley games where it's, you know, 20 carries for a buck 35, couple of touchdowns. Jalen Hurts sprinkles in a touch push, two passing touchdowns. You're looking at 35-10 Philly. It's kind of what I'm expecting. I don't expect much out of the Giants here. I expect this game to be quote-unquote over relatively quickly, and that is kind of where I'm at. All right, but let's get into some games I am interested in a whole heck of a lot this week. Cardinals at Colts. Colts are 6.5-point favorites. Now, this kind of goes back to my sentiment of the Cardinals pulled defeat from the jaws of victory. They were up. They were running into the end zone to go up 28-7, and instead they drop it, immediate 14-point swing, and momentum is killed and sideline kerfuffles and so on and so forth. Meanwhile, the Indianapolis Colts, led by Indiana Jones himself, Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes, they are one of the NFL's best teams. They're 4-1. Jonathan Taylor looks like a legitimate player, offensive player of the year candidate. They are absolutely exciting to watch right now. The resurgence of Daniel Jones is something to behold. Another quarterback that has escaped the situation and looked a lot better. So Donovan and Baker both escaped Cleveland, New York, and Carolina, respectively. Daniel Jones has escaped New York. And we talk about that on the YouTube show as well. Saquon Barkley, after New York, was a different player. Daniel Jones, after New York, was a different player. Brian Daboll, looked like his offensive guy. The two best offensive guys he's had since he's been in New York, both have looked better after leaving New York. Which is saying something. Which is saying something. Maybe he laid the foundation? I don't know. But I do know, whenever they are no longer on New York, they are one of the best players in the league. And, you know, the 6.5 points reflect that. I think Arizona covers, but I think Indianapolis wins the game. I think it's closer than 6.5. I think it's about 4. I think it ends about 28-24. But I still think Indiana finds a way to win the game late to go up 28-24 and to keep it that way. The Seattle Seahawks at the Jacksonville Jaguars. So Seattle just battled against Tampa. Now they go at Jacksonville. Jacksonville is on cloud 100 after beating the Chiefs. They are 4-1. I believe they're 2 games clear now of Kansas City. So absolutely spectacular weekend for Jacksonville and the Seattle Seahawks, who probably feel like they should have beaten the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And if they want to make that case, I would second it, honestly. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they should have beaten them. But they didn't, right? And so I think that is reflected in the point spread. It's only 1.5 points. Now, there is a long way to go from Seattle to Jacksonville. But Jacksonville had a roaring home crowd on Monday night for the team against the Chiefs. If they get similar, it's going to be hard for Seattle to win the game. Now, Seattle is used to the Thunderdome, basically, in Seattle, that's curved and designed to bounce sound waves off, so on and so forth. But it's different when it's against you and when it is for you. So that is definitely going to keep our eye on there with Seahawks at Jags. Jags are 1.5 point favorites. I'm going to lean win and point spread, of course, to Jacksonville. It's really hard to win a game by a point. It's possible, but it is incredibly difficult. So I'm going to give point spread and win to Jacksonville. The San Francisco 49ers at the Tampa Bay Bucks. So the other half of that epic QB duel, he faces the San Francisco 49ers, ironically, in the same division as the Seahawks. So obviously the Niners cannot match that explosive ability. Yes, they've been throwing the ball around all over the yard, you know, with 50 pass attempts or something like that in their last game. I think Sam Darnold threw the ball 49 times. Absolutely insane amount of throws in the game, especially in the NFL. That's an air raid college number. 49 attempts, that's an air raid college number. They got that done in the NFL. That's not really, like I said, the NFL's style or technique, but they were able to do it, execute it, and win. Regardless, if the Niners were to come out in that heavy pass stuff, we may get another historical performance. It'll be another guy on the resurgence, Mac Jones, versus Tampa Bay this time, which would, of course, have Baker Mayfield. So absolutely, absolutely awesome matchup in front of us, especially quarterback-wise. I think Mac Jones is going to be the starter still, which means that a lot of those quick, efficient throws that the offense had are going to continue to be there. I think Tampa Bay Buccaneers, in response to the loss they suffered, in continuation of that win, Tampa Bay, I think, is going to continue on that path. They're 2.5 point favorites. I have them winning the game outright, so of course take the points. But Tampa Bay is going to win that game probably about 4 points. I can see a 31-27 situation going down. All right, Sunday night football. The Lions are at the Chiefs. Jared Goff, Dan Campbell, Sam Laporta, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Aiden Hutchinson, Penei Sewell, Terry Arnold, and the rest of the crew are headed on the road against Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Xavier Worthy and Andy Reid and the rest of that crew and the Hunt family at Kansas City. Kansas City right now is 2.5-point favorites. I don't know, legitimately, I don't know if Kansas City has what it takes to win this game defensively. And it's not from a talent perspective. It's not even a scheme perspective. Detroit is going to be Detroit. They're going to run the ball right at you and dare you to stop it. If you don't, they're going to continue to find ways to run the ball right at you. I actually have the Detroit Lions winning this game, which will put Kansas City behind the proverbial eight ball as far as making the playoffs. That NFC loss wouldn't kill them, but it does count on the record. So it could be a situation they end up in a tiebreaker they don't want to be in. But the Lions, in my opinion, are going to defeat the Chiefs. I just think they have a little bit too much defensively right now, and I don't know what's going on with the Chiefs offensively. So I am going to go with the Lions. And then the doubleheader on Monday Night Football, you have Bills at Falcons plus 3.5, and Bears at Commanders minus 4.5. I think the Falcons win the game outright. Watching the Buffalo Bears closely, as I was being a Patriots fan, I thought there were a lot of lapses in either focus or preparation against the Patriots. I feel like a lot of things that happened in the game maybe shouldn't have. And I think they're either going to be coached out, allowed, or removed. And I think the Buffalo Bills have to kind of figure out what they want to do about those problems. Well, first of all, IDing those problems and then kind of working them out. And I think it's a bad week to do that against a good Atlanta team. Now they're struggling. They've had their struggles in the passing game, but I mean, that's a pretty good defense to get right against in Buffalo. But they've had their struggles in the passing game in Atlanta, and so I'm just curious to watch this game. Atlanta is 3.5-point favorites. I say take the Bills side of it. Maybe I think the Bills, maybe I think Atlanta wins by a field goal, or a field goal is less than 3.5. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. Gambling wise, I would lean to the Bills side. However, football wise, I would lean to Atlanta. And then, I'm sorry, the Bills 3.5-point favorite. So the Bills coming by 3, and I still hit. So take the under 3.5. My apologies. And then the Bears at the Commanders. The Commanders are 4.5-point favorites. On that, I'm taking the over. But you have a situation with the Bears. I know the Bears ain't got enough right now. Ben Johnson does not have the horses to run his scheme the way he would like. In Washington, it's pretty set up. I mean, the quarterback's there, the running back's there, the tight end's there, the backup tight end's there. The offensive line is, I mean, it is crisp in Washington. Right now, the Bears trying to iron some stuff out. So I'm going to go with the Commanders here. I'm going to even eat the 4.5 and say they're going to win by more than that, which would be anti-conventional NFL wisdom. However, it is what it is. But up next, I'm going to shift into college football and talk about their big weekend. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to jump into college football. So last week, kind of a down week in the sport, or was anticipated to be a down week in the sport. And then winless UCLA beats Penn State. And it wasn't the only upset of the weekend, right? Yeah, Alabama taking care of their business. You had Texas falling to Florida. The preseason number one and number two teams in Texas and Penn State are both unranked. It's the fastest it's ever happened in college football history. I mean, it is a topsy-turvy season already. A lot of questions, not a lot of answers, a lot of wants, not a lot of definitiveness happening right now at the college football level. But let's get right into this weekend's slate of games. So you have number 8 Alabama at number 14 Missouri. So the SEC is packed right now with ranked teams. A lot of ranked teams in the SEC. Texas is no longer one of them, but there's a lot of ranked teams right now in the SEC. Very convenient the Big Ten lost one at the same time. Those are the two premier college football conferences easily in the nation, the Big Ten, the SEC. They kind of mirror each other in how they act, how they move in their rankings. And so very ironically, there's a submarine, a sinking submarine of a team in both conferences, in Texas and Penn State. But back to Bama and Missouri, Alabama's looking good right now. I think they've got the Heisman front runner at quarterback right now in Ty Simpson. I think Kalen DeBoer has kind of leveled the ship. He's kind of playing differently now. He's run this Proctor package where the offensive tackle Proctor has gotten the ball a couple of times. He's gotten it thrown to him. He's gotten it handed to him. And so they're kind of playing that way. And then defensively, they've woke it up. Is it the Alabama defense of old? No. But it also can't be based on rules, legislation, play times, play styles. It won't be, right? But they're playing a lot better SEC level defense. I think DeBoer has kind of gotten this thing figured out. On the other side in Missouri, you've got a team that's quietly having a really good season, right? So Missouri is ranked 14th, right? And so Alabama's ranked 8th. So you're not looking at a school, the situation that's this massive gap. Because if you look at it, Missouri's undefeated. Missouri's 5-0, right? Missouri is 5-0. The quarterback, Preble, if I mispronounce the name, I'm sorry, but Preble's 9 touchdowns, 3 picks. They've got Hardy at running back. He's got a 730 yards on 9 touchdowns. And so they have one of the better offenses in the conference. They're undefeated. It's at home for Missouri, and I'm picking Alabama. I just think that Alabama right now is starting to figure it out. I don't know the level of competition, rather, that Missouri has played. I think pressure matters. Missouri so far has beaten. Missouri so far has beaten Central Arkansas, Kansas, not bad, ULL, South Carolina, and UMass. So no one in South Carolina. Effectively. And so they haven't faced a level of competition like Alabama's going to provide them. It's a lot of pressure. I believe College Game Day is there. College Game Day is in Oregon. But maybe SEC Network or Nation's going there. Like, this is a big game. It's the biggest game in the SEC this week. Probably a top 5. I have it a top 4 biggest game of the weekend. It's going to be an absolute show. I've got Alabama here squeaking get out. Point spread's about 2.5. I got Bama by about a field goal. So I think the point spread's right on the money. If you get it somewhere, 3.5 on Missouri, take Missouri there. But anywhere 3 or less, I'd lean towards the Alabama side of the bet. The Red River Shootout between 6th-ranked Oklahoma and unranked Texas. Again, Texas was the number one team in the country preseason. They have fallen to Ohio State. And they have since fallen just recently last week to Florida, and they are now unranked. Arch Manning seems to be disaster right now. 2A level football in Louisiana is not the stiffest level of competition, especially in the district he was in. Not the stiffest. He usually got knocked out fairly early in the playoffs and never did the national camp circuit. Had a very protected recruitment under the advisement of the Mannings, which, hey, smart decision, right? Don't show him your faults if you don't have to. Ultimately, he ends up at Texas. He gets his money with NIL and EA college football and all that stuff, right? But he's struggling. I mean, he's looked bad in most of the games except for UTEP. Meanwhile, on the other side, Oklahoma doesn't have their would-have-been front-running Heisman quarterback of their own in Mateer. Absolute gamer. Reminds me a lot of Baker Mayfield. Absolute baller of a dude. He's a gamer. He is going to try to rip your throat out and tell you about it. I love that kid. But Mateer, he's all right. And he's trying to push for Red River. He's trying to get back for the game. But it could be a situation where Oklahoma's starting their backup quarterback again against Texas. There's a lot of issues there right now in Texas in Austin. There are problems right now that I'm sure Steve Sarkisian is trying to get it figured out. He's trying to get it legislated. He beats Oklahoma. He's back in the top 20, and then he's got to win out to have a chance of the at-large being in the playoffs, with your two losses being, I think, the current number one team in Ohio State and Florida. Not great on the Florida loss, but he was on the road at the Swamp. Many of team has fallen victim to the Swamp. Speaking of a team that has fallen victim of the Swamp, well, two teams actually. Before, South Carolina at LSU. LSU was off last week, so they actually fell to 14, and then due to people losing, come back up to 11. In a week, they didn't play football. But South Carolina comes into LSU. LSU's a 9.5-point favorite. Now, I'm not sure what offense that's supposed to get 9.5-point favorite, because LSU has the worst good team offense in college football right now. And I don't think it's close. I mean, it's Garrett Nussmeier was injured, then he was healthy, then he played bad again, so he was injured again. Now he's back healthy, or he's healing, or whatevering at this point. With Garrett Nussmeier, they can't run the ball. They have one of the worst rushing attacks in the country. Not just the conference, in the country. And they're going to deal with South Carolina, man, who has electric playmakers all over the field. Of course, everyone in the world knows about Nick Harbor. If you play EA college football at all, you know about Nick Harbor. They also have Lenora Sellers. They also have an offensive firepower that can give LSU some trouble, especially if the game stays close. So what you don't want to have happen if you're LSU is that this is a three-point game in the fourth quarter, and now you're a play away. You're not a drive away. You are a play away from being in a world of trouble, and that's something that you want to try your best to avoid. But again, if it's a situation where it's close late, a Lenora Sellers scrambles for six could change the entire fate of the game. Now, it's in Death Valley, which is the real Death Valley, which is hard for anybody to go in. I've got LSU winning, but I don't think it's going to be 9.5. I think it's going to be a six-point game at the buzzer. And then the big one, college game day. The big one, number 7 Indiana at number 3 Oregon. So Oregon feels like in just as many weeks, they had number 3 Penn State in Happy Valley. Now they get number 7 Indiana in Eugene. Huge, huge game for the program of Oregon and Indiana here. Indiana, last playoffs was a Cinderella team and got smoked in the first round. This is kind of their first big, big test since that point to see just how far, if any, they've closed the gap on those national powers. Oregon is a lot of people's trendy national championship pick, them and Ohio State. A lot of people's trendy national championship pick. There's going to be a big game for them. Again, if they can crush Indiana, sends Indiana back down, but also another feather in the hat for this football team. They would have beaten number 3 on the road and number 7 at home. So another feather in the cap for Dan Lanning and his Oregon crew led by Dante Moore at quarterback, who is a lot of people's Heisman favorites. Usually Dante Moore, Ty Simpson these days as your Heisman favorites. But absolutely congratulations to Oregon on just looking the way they've looked. But Indiana's no slouch, right? They're number 7 in the country for a reason. I think this is going to be a whale of a game. I just think Dante Moore makes one more play and Oregon escapes it. It's 7.5-point spread. I should take the under there. I've got this thing playing at about 3 or 4. I just think Dante Moore makes one more play late, whether it's the first down to ice it or the throw for the touchdown to win it or something. I just think Dante Moore, man, that Heisman moment, he makes one more play to win the game. But up next, we're going to shift to our best for last, which is going to be a talk about the WNBA Finals. Welcome back into the show, and now we're going to jump into Best for Last, which is going to be a talk on the WNBA Finals. More of a quick update, as you guys may or may not know. The Las Vegas Aces have taken a commanding 2-0 lead over the Phoenix Mercury. This is a showcase moment. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Asia wasn't the best player on the planet. Now, I've also said that you can have the three, either of the three you want, Nafisa Collier, Breanna Stewart, or Asia Wilson. I won't argue. If one of your answers is that, I won't argue. For me personally, it's Asia Wilson, and she's about to cap off one of the greatest seasons in WNBA history. Her team was dead in the water with about 16-ish games left. They were dead. I mean, they were scraping the playoffs. I mean, right around 500, they rip off like 18-19 straight. She wins her fourth MVP, the first lady ever to have four MVPs in WNBA. The WNBA is only 26 or 27 years old. She has four MVPs already. She won't be her last MVP, and she's about to bring her team to the WNBA championship, cementing herself as arguably the GOAT of the WNBA. She's not even 30 yet, so huge moment in time, huge moment in history, rather, for the Las Vegas Aces. However, now they got to go to Phoenix. All right, now they got to go to Phoenix, and Alyssa Thomas seeking her, I think, her first WNBA championship. If she were to win that, she puts herself on a very, very short list of greatest players ever, considering her prowess for the triple-double. She's the greatest triple-double person of all time. She's the utility. She is the engine. She is flat-out one of the greatest players ever. Winning a championship cements that and puts her at a level that few have reached in the women's game. She would have her own lane in history, which is rare. In sports, anything really, to have your own lane in history, which is where she's at right now. But I mean, the Mercury have to win some games because obviously the Aces are looking to close this thing out sooner rather than later. Sure, they'd love a sweep, sure, they'd love it even better if they win it in Vegas. But absolutely great series so far, great, you know, wrap up to the WNBA. A great conclusion, a great climax to the WNBA season, and I'm excited. I think the Aces are going to win this thing, and I kind of went into it a week ago saying the Aces are going to win. Aces is the best player on the planet. The only person I thought could have, only people I thought could have stood to her was either Nafisa Collier or Breanna Stewart, both of which are not in this finals. Although Nafisa Collier is making her waves, both of which are not on the court during this finals. I think Asia's too much. I think Jackie's too much. I think Chelsea's too much. I think Jewel Lloyd is too much. I think there's just too many people on the Las Vegas Aces, and no slouch to the Phoenix Mercury. They've got Lisa Thomas. They've got DeWanna Bonner. They have Satu Sabale. They have Kalia Copper, right? So there's no slander as far as talent there. I just think when the talent's close and you have that person, you have her, which is Asia Wilson. That's going to put you over the top here. I think the Aces are going to win the WNBA championship. But that is all I have for you guys today. I'm glad you're able to join me, listen to this show a little bit shorter than last week, which is expected considering that last week we had so much to get through because we missed multiple weeks. However, we should be back on track for regularly scheduled episodes, probably once a week. I can't guarantee what day of the week, but we're back on track for regularly scheduled episodes and release episodes. But this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out. You have